The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast.
Streaking incongruously around the heavenly bodies like Barry Glendenning during his last trip to Stringfellows, it's Football Weekly Extra. And as Alex Ferguson parties like it's 1999 after winning the Champions League for only the second time in his purple reign, we've got all the views that are fit to Prince, plus that cringe-inducing pun as a special tribute to James Richardson. Speaking of the Podfather, he's currently on the ground in Moscow, literally most likely, but in a couple of suitably short minutes we'll make like diligent fluffers and get him up. Then he'll give you our old pleasure. Also in today's show, Celtic and Rangers build to a finish of stereotypically Scottish tightness, the Football League playoffs, will the Premier League be bidding welcome to Hull, will the Championship be dreading the arrival of Leeds, and a token mention of Rochdale. And because that's not enough, we'll round off with a compilation of the few highlights and many lowlifes to have featured in this season's pod.
Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
My name is Paul Doyle, and my fellow inmates in the pod today, banged up like Joey Barton, our serial offender John Ashton.
Morning, Paul.
Morning. And a man who's been responsible for a few career-threatening sentences of his own in his time, Barry Glendenning.
Yeah, thank you.
And James, on the phone from Moscow.
Yes, indeed.
How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, actually. And yourself?
Very well, as well.
I want to ask Barry how he was possibly able to know what I was saying on the stadium screens in his minute-by-minute.
Oh, your cheap gags at the expense of Liverpool fans in a bid to weasel your way into the affections of Chelsea Man United fans.
Yes, my cheap gags at the expense of Liverpool fans.
It was broadcast live on television. The Sky commentator said, we'd love to give you more punditry viewers, but James Richardson is putting on such a sterling and funny exhibition of stand-up comedy.
No, but it came across on the television, did it?
No, it didn't.
You're a cruel man, though.
My colleague, Paul Doyle, was able to ascertain what you were saying and divulge the details to me.
What was it like entertaining thousands of people for the first time?
Well, they were all quite well behaved, I thought, last night. And they even managed to stop it raining for the opening ceremony, which was a doozy. Apparently by flying fighter jets through the clouds to break up the rain cumulus.
They're going. I've heard that. All right, they're going to do it as well for the opening ceremony in Beijing. Apparently,
they now?
Have
that's
fighter
right.
planes on standby to.
Say what? If only
they have
done
to be
that
fighter
for
planes?
A match against Croatia, Steve McLaren might still be in a job.
Penalty shootouts are a brilliant way to end such encounters, aren't they?
There is
no better or more dramatic way.
No, absolutely not. Unless you were to shoot, perhaps, the individuals involved in the manner of the Soviets, I believe, some 50 years ago. But no, other than that, it certainly brought together triumph and tragedy in one handy kind of 10-foot square area of pitch.
Can you express in words, rather than hearty laughter, what you were feeling when John Terry slipped while taking his penalty?
No, I was actually... I was fairly impartial, as it is quite possible to be when you're watching United play Chelsea. But I was more delighted when Ronaldo attempted to defraud Van der Sar. Czech and blew it. But yeah, Terry, I don't know. What actually happened to him? Because all I saw was him go to kick the ball, and then there was an almighty thump on the hoarding in front of me.
Well, he slipped.
Was it the pitch's fault or what?
Well, one of our blogging community, whose name I can't remember, had an entry after Paul's end of game report last night, and he made a point which I thought was quite valid, that it was a real centre-halves penalty in that he planted his foot all wrong, his standing leg, his toes were pointing inwards, he opened his hips when he shouldn't have, and it's entirely his own fault that he slipped. None of the other players slipped, it's worth noting.
But that is true.
Of course, he only had to take a penalty because Didier Drogba, who was the fifth designated penalty taker, was sent off. Now, Barry, I don't know how you think slappers should be treated, but do you think he deserved that red card?
He may not have deserved it for that actual offence, but he thoroughly deserved it for his antics throughout the season. I don't pity him in the slightest. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. He's an absolutely scurrilous individual. Great footballer, but...
Surprisingly, some of the Chelsea fans were actually applauding him as he went off, but most of the reactions have been that they're absolutely glad to see the back of him. They hope they don't see him in a Chelsea shirt again.
And you'd imagine they probably won't.
Well, although he said in an interview in France Football this week, which is where he originally declared that he wanted to leave at the end of the season, that he now really likes London. He's just bought a house here and he wants to stay, he thinks.
Well, Fulham, perhaps, you know.
Brentford.
We should probably backpedal a little and just recognise that it was a brilliant match, worthy of a European Cup final, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it was a terrific roller coaster ride pitch side. Although the first half, I had the very great fortune of speaking to Gus Hiddink at half time, and he was very scathing about the quality of the football on display in the first half, the two goals notwithstanding. But equally, I asked him about the stories that he might be going to join Chelsea in a month or two, and interestingly, he very definitely didn't say no. He said, "I respect these clubs very much, and I really like English football. First, I have to see what happens this summer. First, I have to take care of Russia this summer." So it was very much a kind of, it was almost weird. It was kind of curious, because in other places he'd always said, no, I'm staying with Russia, I've got a new contract, and I don't know why they're delaying signing it, because apparently he signed one half of it and then the legal team have to ratify it or something. Anyway.
Yeah. I know the belief among Russian journalists is that he definitely will replace Grant at Chelsea next year.
Right. Yes.
He's not particularly keen about getting back into club football. He kind of likes the lifestyle of being an international manager. But Roman Abramovich is his paymaster, and he may just have to do what Roman tells him to do.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. We all know that feeling, unfortunately, Paul.
John Ashton, Manchester United, worthy European champions?
I thought that it was a cracking game, and it reached its zenith about 10 minutes before half-time when, was it Rooney who hit that cross-field ball over to Ronaldo and looked up, picked out Tevez, and the diving header. If that had gone in, the game would have been more or less over, and it would have been one of the great Champions League final goals. As it was, it carried on in a similar vein. It didn't quite reach those heights again in terms of the standard of play, but it was an absorbing tie.
I thought United deserved it for the season they'd had, but Chelsea probably deserved it for their performance on the night, particularly that second half.
They were excellent in the second half, but they didn't start well. I mean, they appeared to freeze basically at the start. Yeah. United were just running rings around them, despite being outnumbered in the middle. United were dominated.
Well, that was what made it such a good game, wasn't it? It's because there's a lot of discussion on the blog today and in the various pieces in the various different newspapers as who actually deserved to win. And it was that sort of tussle. It ebbed and it flowed, and United were a better first half. Essien had a bit of a mare. Second half, he came into the game a lot more. Ballack started to control the midfield a little more. And so you couldn't really say that one side definitely deserved to win and one side definitely deserved to lose. It's open to debate.
Was it me, or did Rooney have a complete shocker?
No, he didn't have a complete shocker. I mean,
apart from that diagonal ball you were just talking about to Ronaldo, I thought certainly in the first half he looked very, very off his game.
He was certainly the least important of the United players, I thought. He had the least influence on the game until he came off. And on the Chelsea side, both Joe Cole and Malouda were virtually invisible for most of the game.
Joe Cole had a shocker. I mean, Rooney, I think, played an important part in the... He played a ball to Nani, who pulled it back to Giggs for the Terry's unbelievable header off the line. Giggs should have buried that ball, I mean, but it was a marvellous piece of defending by Terry, fair play to him. But I think Rooney played a part in that, but I could be mistaken. Certainly wouldn't be the first time.
That he's played a part, or that you've been mistaken?
That I've been mistaken.
What about post-match? What did you get up to, James?
It was the usual kind of thing. UEFA have a
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with...
these things, there's always a giant hospitality tent. You basically just sit there drinking Heineken's beer or other people's champagne and eating canapes and that kind of thing and moaning about what a miserable life it is.
Was it full of glamorous women in ball gowns and rich billionaire oligarchs and...
You know the kind of thing, Barry,
people
yes.
walking around with trays full of Ferrero Rocher.
It's largely full of people who just come from the TV compound and have been there for about 24 hours and lots and lots and lots of marketing people from Heineken, Vodafone, etc. Even more glamorous than your impressions.
I think I would rather walk through the gates of hell than attend such an event.
So where are you going now, James? Are you about to board a plane?
Well, not for an hour or two, but the Moscow traffic's a bit of an enigma, like an Avram Grant press conference or buying melons. You never know quite what you're going to get. So we were packed onto a bus to get to the airport hideously early, and I'm sitting around now. So please don't cut me off, because you're all I've got, Paul.
Well, we're going to let you go anyway, James.
All right. Nice one. Well, any news I should know from home?
Yes, we need you back in the pod as soon as possible.
Right.
We've got a Euro 2008 preview going.
Yes, indeed.
Starting
that's
on
next,
June
that's
the
Monday
2nd.
Week, yeah?
My employer, Sean, insisted that I mention that. Okay, James.
Nice one.
Thank you very much.
Not at all.
Great
thank you,
stuff.
Guys. Have a lovely time. I'll look forward to seeing you soon.
John Ashton, the Football League playoffs. Why are they interesting?
Why are they interesting? Because isn't it the richest game? Last night's a drop in the ocean that is the championship playoff in terms of cash. Is it the 100 million quid game, the 60 million quid game, or something like that?
Who are you tipping? Hull or Bristol City? Would you like to win? Bristol City play a nice brand of football.
Yeah, I think I'd like
poor man's Arsenal.
I think I'd like Bristol City to win, although I tipped them to lose in the semi and they got through against Palace.
The best journalists get tips wrong.
Well, yeah, that's the whole idea, isn't it? Yeah. To be honest, I've no idea, and obviously the form book goes out the window, doesn't it, on these big occasions. Hull haven't beaten City since New Year's Day 1985, it says here. And City beat them at Ashton Gate earlier on in the season, I think in March. So, you know, the history perhaps favours City. Hull haven't played at Wembley before. I don't know the last time they played in a big playoff or cup game, say even at the Millennium Stadium. City, last time they were at Wembley was 2000 in the Otto Windscreen Shield. And
has Dean Windass ever played at Wembley in his century-long career?
Good question. I bet he must have done. He's played everywhere.
I have a feeling he hasn't. I think I read somewhere that he has never played at Wembley before.
It could be true.
I can't, Ashton.
I can't think. The only playoff final that I can remember Dean Windass been involved in was back in, what was it, 2003, when Sheffield United made the final, and he was told that he wasn't in the match day 16 the day before the game, and stormed out of the hotel and went home and contributed to United's heavy 3-0 defeat against Wolves. They're both taking different attitudes to the final. City have got their special Wembley suits. No suits for Hull. So we'll have to see how that pans out. And City are going for the big sort of we're the underdogs thing. Nobody knows about us. In fact, Daily Adebola this week has been saying there are a lot of people out there who don't even know the names of Bristol City players. What do you two think about that?
I think that's a disgrace. I think it's kind of interesting if you look at the music that comes from both cities. You know, it's sort of similar to the teams in that, you know, Bristol you've got Tricky and you've got Massive Attack and Portishead, and then you go to Hull you've got, you know, the House Martins, the beautiful South. Anything with Paul Heaton in it, basically.
Funny you should mention music, Barry, because the word on the street is you've jumped ship. You're now appearing on The Guardian's music podcast. You made your debut yesterday.
Well, we recorded yesterday. I believe it'll be broadcast tomorrow.
They're busy deleting all your contributions, from what I hear.
It's like one of those crossovers, cartoon crossovers. So I'm like, you know, Homer appearing on Family Guy with Peter Griffin.
Do you know as much about music as you do about football?
I think I can see where this is going. I like to think I acquitted myself quite well on the Music Weekly podcast, but if 5 or 10 of our listeners tune in and listen to that, I believe their listenership will be doubled overnight. So, you know, go and have a go. It'll be up on Friday on the music website.
Well, that's something to look forward to. Another thing to look forward to is Doncaster v Leeds in another Football League playoff.
That's Sunday. They've turned it. They used to play it. Always play it over Bank Holiday weekend, and they used to play the League Two was on the Saturday, then the League One, then the Championship game. And they've turned it around. I believe it's because the standard of the pitch obviously deteriorates as they play games on consecutive days. So in theory, now the Championship teams have the better surface to play on, and the League Two teams have to play on a marshy quagmire that's all bubbles, and they're sort of used to that sort of thing. So it doesn't really matter. The League One thing, there's tension already building ahead of that. Obviously, it's a big Yorkshire derby.
Who'd have thought it?
But also, there's the nasty Leeds fans have been trying their ticket. Allocation has sold out, and they've been hovering around the Keepmoat Stadium ticket office, which is Doncaster's ground, for anybody who doesn't know.
Yeah, I don't like the way you looked at me when you said that.
There's sort of a slight...
I'm not Jimbo Richardson. I am aware that there is life outside the Premiership.
And they've been trying to buy up Doncaster tickets for themselves. So Doncaster have had to suspend ticket sales from their ticket office. So there's a bit of bad blood there, a building.
I saw actually a guy on the... They had cameras outside the Leeds ticket office yesterday, and just to show the lengths that supporters will go to get tickets, and they interviewed this guy who was near the end of a very long queue. Are you optimistic about your chances of getting a ticket? Nah, I've just heard they're about to sell out, so there's no way I'm going to get one here. And your man goes, what are you going to do? I think I'll just go home.
Oh, the things you have to go through as a football fan.
Rochdale v Stockport. How's that one going to go?
That's the League Two game.
I know.
I fancy Stockport for that because I've got a sort of slight soft spot for Stockport. I've followed their fortunes for a few years, and I do feel in playoff finals it's better to have the easier your semi-final is. I think psychologically it's a boost. Rochdale had a sort of thrilling two-legged affair with Darlington that went down to penalties, and it was a cracking game. But I think the emotional investment that a team makes in that can have a different. Stockport cruise past Wickham, winning 1-0 in each of the semi-finals. But having said that, that would indicate that perhaps Doncaster would win the Leeds game, because they hammered Southend 5-1 in their semi. I feel that Leeds might just sneak up there. So if you wanted a triple, I'd be going for Hull, Leeds and Stockport.
And all their supporters are now tearing their hair out and banging their heads on the table.
I do apologise for that.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
And now we have Hugh Murray on the line to talk about Scottish football, in particular the end of the Scottish Premier League season, which arrives tonight. Celtic and Rangers going to a level on points. One of them is going to be very disappointed tonight. Which one will it be, Hugh?
Well, you'd be a brave man if you place a bet on it. I mean, Celtic, from the start of April, when they were apparently out of the race, 7 points behind Rangers. Rangers had a game in hand. Celtic have somewhat miraculously clawed it back and are now level on points. Celtic 4 goals in front. If Celtic beat Dundee United even 1-0 tonight, Rangers have to score 5 in Aberdeen, so the odds slightly in Celtic's favour. But it's been such a turbulent, topsy-turvy season that, like I say, you'd be brave if you put a wager on it.
Yeah. Now, everyone says that the reason Rangers have sort of tailed off is simply because of fixture pile-up. Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, I think it may be, and not just in a physical sense. I mean, the players have all looked fit, but I think mentally their exertions in Europe have taken quite a lot out of them. I mean, we've seen this before. Celtic getting to Seville in 2003, ended up not winning the championship. Teams mentally suffer, I think, from playing the number of games that Rangers have done, and if getting over the line is a difficult thing, I think this is maybe just hitting home at a bad time for Rangers.
They're playing at Aberdeen, of course, and am I right in thinking that there's a particularly bitter rivalry between Rangers and Aberdeen going back quite a few years? Is it because of that Ian Durant incident years ago?
That really sparked it in the mid-1980s, the tackle on Ian Durant at Pittodrie, and the fans, there was no love lost whatsoever between the fans. Aberdeen's fans would like nothing more than to be the team that stops Rangers winning the championship. Ticket sales have been boosted at Pittodrie since the start of the week because the punters up there got an inkling that Rangers may lose the championship at Pittodrie. So there's nothing they would like more. But Celtic have a tough game. Dundee United have given both the Old Firm real stern tests this season. Craig Levein has done a great job there, and they will want to finish the season on a high. So I don't know if Rangers and Celtic had their pick of games to finish the season, they couldn't have picked a tougher two matches.
You and Barry here.
How are you?
If Celtic do win the title tonight, could the effect on Rangers be so catastrophic that this end of season collapse that they would go on to lose the cup final against Queen of the South on Saturday?
Well, that's an interesting point, Barry. I don't think it's fate or complete that Rangers will win the Scottish Cup. Queen of the South have nothing to lose. They've already shown in beating Aberdeen in the semi-final that they don't fear SPL teams. And because the games are so close, Thursday night to Saturday, there could be a come down for Rangers. Walter Smith, I think, quite cleverly stressed yesterday that for Rangers even to be in this position is a major achievement. Last season, they were scraping just to finish second in the SPL. They've had tremendous progress in the space of the 15 months that Walter Smith has been back at Ibrox.
What's the story at Gretna at the moment, Ewan? Are they going to go out of existence? Will they be lining up in the first division next season?
It's a slow and painful death, I'm afraid. I mean, this has been a sad story, and it's been made even sadder because it's just rumbled on week after week. I don't think there is much genuine hope that they can survive. There was a consortium headed by Paul Davis, a Glasgow-based agent, who seemed to be keen on reviving them, but it's fallen flat. They've made all their staff redundant. In blunt terms, you wonder what is there for any potential buyer. You wonder why they would take over Gretna. Their ground is struggling to meet Scottish Football League standards, so even if they were to play in the first or second division, they would have to spend money developing the ground. And I don't know why that would be a viable proposition for anyone to come in. No staff, no assets as such. So it looks a pretty bleak picture.
Indeed. OK, thanks a lot, Ewan.
No problem.
Great stuff. Enjoy. Which match are you going to tonight?
I've got to Tannadice. Well, I think the decision had to be made before we thought the title would be won, so I think the odds are just in Celtic's favour. So Dundee United v Celtic and a hectic night awaits.
OK, enjoy that.
Cheers.
Bye. And that's pretty much it for today's fiasco. All that remains is for Camby to spend several hours rummaging through the files to find some highlights, and he'll tack them on at the end.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
And in a week that saw Ronaldo brought down by 3 very unexpected tackles, it's welcome to the pod, Kevin McCarron.
Staying home, they're staying home, they're staying. England's staying home.
Guardian Unlimited. Yup, as UEFA faced the nightmare of trying to find credibility for a Euro tournament without the team that couldn't beat Macedonia at home or Israel away, it's Football Weekly Extra. And on today's agenda, not much to crow at. We look back on England's Wembley washout and ask, who's got safer hands, Scott Carson or the Inland Revenue?
It's a fantastic game to go to, it really is.
You've been clearly. What is that noise, Sid? Can I ask?
That noise is I'm
throw a chip.
I'm not. There's a very, very, very small and, may I add, very shit dog barking at people. I don't see the point of having dogs that are that small. It's rubbish.
Is it like one dogs of those Paris stuff. Hilton dogs that she carries in her handbag?
Well, I'm sure Paris Hilton has a point for them, but it is very similar to one of those. It's a really rubbish dog.
Right, it's just bizarre. We were engaged in a little bit of conversation. We mentioned Luke Young's bullet for Borough against Spurs the other day, yeah? And producer Canby revealed that he'd actually stolen Luke Young's girlfriend away from said Luke Young. And then Barry chipped in with the fact that Ryan Giggs tried to cop off with his bird, and Barry?
She didn't go off with him. Not my current bird, I have to stress. But, my bird at the time, she didn't go off with Ryan Giggs, who had sent his agent over to chat her up, which I thought was classy.
That's how it's done, is it?
Yeah, apparently. But, I suspect she would have been off with him in a heartbeat if she had known who he was.
Right, didn't the fact that there was an agent involved imply that it was somebody of some standing?
No, I went to the toilet. We were in a pub. I went to the toilet, and while I was in the toilet, Ryan Giggs' agent came over and pointed Giggs out to my girlfriend, then girlfriend, and said, my friend Ryan wants to know if you'd like to go for a drink with him.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's interesting.
Sort of that's a case of tapping up, isn't it?
It's interesting that you mentioned taking possession of the ball, because I'm just wondering, how did Ashley Young, how did he perform?
You're obviously alluding to yesterday's News of the World
this
exclusive.
Well, this exciting piece of paper that you've got clutched in your hot and sticky hand.
Yes.
Barry, what's the story here? Ashley Young caught in some kind of webcam self-pleasuring misery.
Yes. Well, I don't think it was misery at the time.
Right.
I'm sure he
it generally is straight afterwards, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Misery only once it hits the News of the World. I think.
Right. Do you think his aim was that bad?
But yeah, Ashley was caught. He recorded himself twanging the one string bass on Tinternet and sent.
Sid, you're in Valencia because you went to see Valencia's Get Out of Jail Act against Zaragoza, yes?
I do see their Get Out of Jail Act against Zaragoza.
Ronaldinho has been given now permission to chat to as many Milanese clubs as he wishes by Barcelona, yes?
Ronaldinho is chatting to as many Milanese clubs as he wants.
Ronald Koeman out of the picture at Valencia.
Well, Ronald Koeman out of the picture at Valencia.
Valencia do stand a very real chance of going down. They're, what, 2 points away now with, what, 5 to play, is it?
Yeah, they're 2 points away with 5 to play.
Where you saw the 2-2 draw with Real Madrid, there's left Zaragoza in the bottom three, 1 point from safety with one game to go.
Yep, it has left Zaragoza in the bottom three, 1 point from safety.
Game to go. Go on, the whole sentence.
I'll just repeat you all the way through.
So. We saw it last night with Liverpool players surrounding a referee who quite correctly sent off Peter Crouch, and then Peter Crouch abusing the human rights of several Chelsea supporters as he walked down the tunnel.
Well, I think Crouch isn't a nice piece of work, and everyone sort of loved him about a year and a half ago when he did his silly robot dance. But, you know, I've got a friend of mine, Andy Bull, who works on the desk, whose mate works at a fast food place in Southampton. And Crouch, right. Crouch to give
he's
you
well
example,
connected.
Yeah.
you are the Luciano
Some
Moggi
of my best contacts.
Well, Crouch came in one day when he was at Southampton and demanded some nachos.
Is this story going anywhere,
Sean? He said, OK, fine, gave him some nachos. And then Crouch said, you do know I'm not going to pay for them. And, you know, this guy's on, you know, minimum wage, didn't really care. So he handed over the nachos. And then Crouch started eating them one after another. And every time he'd say, Crouch is having his nachos, over and over and over again.
But he is worth mentioning because, seeing as how we're on the subject of words of the day, Ilunga, which is his name, is also a word in the Congolese language Chiluba, and was recently voted by the International Translators Association as the hardest word in the world to translate into English.
Right. Close at 5 in London, it would never have been moved to find that out.
But what it means, Ilunga, if you ever are in the neighbourhood in Chiluba, it means a person who is ready to forgive any abuse for the first time, to tolerate it for a second time, but never for a third.
Right, and how would you say that in English?
Pretty much the way I just had.
Some posts. Tim the Monkey, I meant to ask this question last week. How does Barry know that shoving your finger up a dog's rectum stops it barking? Barry?
Actually, I think I was wrong. It's if the dog has you in its by its teeth. All right. You shove a finger up its rectum.
Right.
It lets go. I don't know where I picked. My dad's a vet. I know all sorts of animal-related trivia.
Well, okay. For example?
Well, if you're grabbing a cow by the nose, it's better to use the thumb and middle finger rather than first finger.
Why is that?
I don't know. Again, it's just a handy tip I picked up from my
all right.
father.
Okay. This is a regular font of feature.
Oh, and if you're doing a blood transfusion on a cow and you're right. removing blood from one cow and you have to hold...
Does one cow have to be above the
no,
other?
No, you have to hold the blood over your head and keep moving or it will clot.
Oh, really? It yes. clots very quickly, does
but
it?
But the thing is, it takes ages and it really hurts your arms and you tend to fall asleep or start daydreaming. And then if the cow lashes out, you'll get like 4 litres of blood spilt all over you, as happened to me once. It's
really?
Not nice.
Do cows lash out?
Have you got a word of the week for us?
Have I got a word of the week?
Can I give you a word of the week? Spanish
do.
Word? tell me if it is a Spanish word. Because it could be just an urban myth, but I've been told that Colgate, the prestigious toothpaste vendors, that Colgate or Colgate, or however you would pronounce it in Spanish, means go hang yourself in Spanish. Is that right?
Well, it does, but not because it's Colgate, if you the verb is colgar, is to hang, and when the verb is made reflexive, i.e. something to do to yourself, in the case of it being you, is colgate.
Sunderland Newcastle. Barry, that'll be an exciting game for you, Sunderland Newcastle.
Well, I know I always say this, but this time I'm going to say, and I actually believe it to be true, I think Sunderland will beat Newcastle.
Barry, I put it to you that you are like an Egyptian fish, living in denial.
Another quiet week in football. Still, as the game's top omelette-loving Portuguese makes his exit, it's a special shock Goodbye Jose Football Weekly Extra today, in which we ask, how do you solve a problem like Mourinho? And which clubs are now asking, do you know the way to sign Jose? Also, in a show as packed as Jose's man bag, we look back on this week's Champions League action, with United and Liverpool, and dark times in store for Spurs, as even their next manager reveals he can't beat Arsenal either. Now, VC Findke, is that how you say that? I can't believe the Dutch league was discussed, but then passed by without mention of the playoffs, at the top of the table for the second Champions League spot between Ajax, NAC Breda, FC Twente, and Heerenveen, which is definitely my favourite name for a football team ever.
You see, you could have terminated that email just by saying, I can't believe the Dutch league was mentioned.
If somebody bought James a packet of Just for Men, would it be hair and vein?
You've done some preparation, I hope.
None whatsoever.
Because all the posting this week has been about you, sir.
Has it?
We'll come on to that later, but you have rehearsed.
I want to know what's happened with Barry, for people who can't see us because we're not on the podcast.
That's everyone.
That's everyone. Yeah. Barry is sporting a rather large scar on the top of his forehead. What happened,
Barry? It's kind of got a slight semicircle to it. What's the story?
As I've already explained, on Saturday night, I was performing a drunken reprise of Mark Queto's disallowed try in the World Cup final in my living room, and it went horribly wrong, and I have a carpet burn on my head.
Monday morning, and despite looking as knackered as Mickey Owen's groin, Football Weekly takes to the air for another update on the state of planet football. Item 1, can it be more on the post-Mourinho meltdown? Yes, it can. Duncan Castles reveals the behind-the-scenes pantomime at the club they're now calling Hearts Southern Division. Player drops? Check. Chev interpreting for Abramovich as owner takes over the managing? Check. Sound of chuckling from fans of every other club on the planet? Check-a-roo. We look back on the debut of top hand puppet Avram Grant on the Chelsea very hot seat at Old Trafford. We ask how Arsenal can call themselves contenders when they only put 5 plus Derby. Now, strapped in and wired up today, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry, you're healing up nicely.
I am, thank you very much for noticing.
Excellent. Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi there, are you well?
I am, thanks very much for asking, James.
Right, you look it. And next to him, Mike Adamson.
Hello, James.
Pod pioneer, Mike Adamson.
Pod pioneer, yes.
You remember the old Mark 1 pod, don't you?
I do,
with the
yes.
pedals.
Yes. It's all rather new in here, actually.
It is. It's the future, Mike.
It is, yeah. I'm not sure I like it.
Oof, that is the thing about the future.
Hmm.
That ambivalence. I'll move on. This weekend's games then. Now, plenty of Man City fans have been posting in of late, complaining at the lack of coverage of their team. We are the story of the season, they said. Well, you are now. 6-0 by Chelsea.
Comments to the effect that it was very boring and
that's Chelsea.
They did.
The boring way.
Right, okay. And
the jingle, that's Chelsea.
Is that how the jingle goes?
Yeah, because it's really boring. It's like an American Sunny Delight commercial, isn't it? When they play, it's like, ooh, everybody. everybody. Well, yeah, all those stars on the pitch, but it's so boring and artificial.
What about these 40 condoms that Rubino allegedly purchased?
Well, let's just set this one up. If you're not familiar with this story, basically Brazil, after they had a 5-0 win against Ecuador, thank you very much, continued the scoring, allegedly, till not even the wee small hours, the kind of big fat hours of the next day. Kind of they came out of the club in time for lunch, basically.
Yeah, they went to a place called Catwalk, and apparently this was all allegedly. This was all set up by Rubinho, who'd arranged for lots of young ladies to be there, arranged for lots of his players to be there, and that him and the appropriately named Wagner Love were the centre of this this particular party. And at one stage, Rubinho allegedly said to one of the miners, said to one of the minders that would he mind popping out and buying 40 condoms now. Given the sheer number of players...
But they run out of balloons,
the sheer number of ladies there, it's a bit of a weird one, that. 40 doesn't seem all that many to me. Some of the Spanish press were speculating that perhaps he was blowing them up as a kind of comedy act.
Making animal shapes.
Yeah, I suspect he was filling them up, but probably not with hot
Maybe
air.
He put all 40 on at the same time to give himself added girth.
I had a rather funny joke about a vampire bat over Christmas. Do you want to hear that now?
Yeah.
Okay, here comes my vampire bat joke. A vampire bat comes back to the vampire bat nest with his face all sticky with blood. And all the other vampire bats say, where did you get that blood from? Show us your secrets. And he says, I will show you my secrets. So they all flap out into the night sky and they go flying along, flap, 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 and all the vampire bats go, blood. And they get to this big forest, and in the middle of the forest there's this giant oak tree. And the vampire bat says, you see the big oak tree? And they go, yes. And he says, well, I didn't.
Good job, that one. You wouldn't get Lineker doing that, would you?
And that's it for Football Weekly Extra for this week. We'll be back on Monday, June the 2nd with a Euro 2008 preview. Goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.